found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning. This is Maria Sanchez, and welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show, heard here live daily, Monday through Friday at 9 o'clock at LATalkRadio.com, and then later on in the day for your downloading to listen on demand on iTunes at MariaSanchezShow.com and TheMariaSanchezShow.com. We're live. It's Friday, June 21st, the first day of summer. Yahoo! My favorite day of the whole year is the first day of spring. I love spring, and then that means summer's around the corner, and then so. But summer's awesome also too. So happy Friday to all of you, and we got the last of our numbers in on the program for the month of May last night, actually late last night. Thank you, Sam, and it completes the picture that we're actually you're liking us, and we are being listened to and downloaded and. In some amazing numbers. In fact, earlier this week, our website crashed because our bandwidth had been exceeded. And I got a couple emails from folks, and then my IT guy called me, and he goes, I've got good news and bad news. And I was like, okay. And he goes, the bad news is that the site's been offline for I don't know how long. I think it was a day and a half or something, which is a long time in this day and age. And he says, and that's because the bandwidth got exceeded. So that's the good news, that people are coming. And so I've boosted the bandwidth, so we shouldn't have that problem moving forward. And it's like, okay. So thank you so much for paying attention and for being curious and for listening. It's an honor and it's a privilege. And I can't tell you, I had my last radio program. It was in August of 2008. It was an afternoon drive show, the Maria Sanchez Show, also at that time. And I've been in radio for 21 years. So that was right when the recession was just hitting. And I got off the air, and my boss walks in the room, the program director, and the HR gal walks in the room. And it was 6:01 and Pacific, and in the afternoon, I look at them, and I think, oh, my goodness, what have I said? I must have done something, violated some FCC rule or something. And then they go into this thing because of the economy and because of the downturn. Here's a letter of recommendation. We would like to have you back as soon as things turn around. It has nothing to do with your professionalism, your productivity, your performance, your ratings. And I was like kicked in the gut. I had never, ever, ever been let go of a position in my entire life. I think it took me 72 hours to finally breathe, and then went on. And you know, life gives you lemons and you make lemonade, and you figure it out and you do what you can. And I had communications positions and marketing positions and public information officer positions, and so that was all plain and good. But getting back here to LA Talk Radio with the Maria Sanchez Show, the first time I put the headphones back on, this is the end of our ninth week, by the way, and was in front of the mic, it was like I had regained and reclaimed a limb that I didn't know that had been missing. And it's like, oh, yes, this is your passion. This is what you love. This is what you do. And what I endeavor to do on the program is to create a conversation, is to not have confrontation, is to have knowledge and awareness so that you, the listener, have you're emboldened, you're empowered because you have knowledge that you might not have had before. The other thing that we endeavor to do is try and make this world a better place. So we try and feature as many good stories as possible and ways that we can be of help to those that are less fortunate than we are. And then when we can, we try to do something for Ventura County since it's neglected and overlooked. So that we try and do that once a day, but that doesn't always happen, depending on the news and depending on our guests. So in light of having a conversation, our first guest this morning is going to say something about fracking or hydraulic fracturing, as it's formerly known, that's going to be in opposition to our guest that we had on Tuesday. On Tuesday, we had somebody, Patrick Sullivan, who is from the Center for Biological Diversity. They're a nonprofit, and they are environmentally sensitive, and they stated their position on fracking. And now we are going to have Tupper Hull, who's the Vice President of Communications with the Western States Petroleum Association, speak about their stand on the issue. So if you didn't hear Tuesday's and you are going to hear today, or vice versa, I suggest that you listen to both so that you have an idea about fracking. And we're not just talking about fracking in California. We're talking about it throughout the United States. So if you're not comfortable or familiar with what it is, we'll get into those details today, too. And then before we go on, parenting, it just never ends. I have four children, I've mentioned. I have three sons and a daughter. I had four children in 5 years, fast and furious. As I mentioned, I'm a practicing Roman Catholic, and I wanted a big family. I didn't have my first child, though, until I was 30. So because of that, I wanted to have six, but that after that, I realized that was unrealistic. So anyway, my daughter is the baby. She's 21, and she came home yesterday afternoon and spent the night because she and her cousin, my niece, my goddaughter, are going on a cruise over the weekend. We affectionately call them the booze cruise because they leave on a Friday and they come back on Monday, and it's a weekend filled of debauchery and excess and rest and relaxation and good times and everything. So she came home to do laundry and to repack for the trip and to deliver her cat, which I'm cat sitting for, which she asked me to do. And she rescued an aberrant ill cat, my daughter. She doesn't fall far from the tree. So the cat is mentally addled or impaired, if you will, not the brightest bulb in the universe, and has some issues with the nasal passages and stuff like that. But my daughter loves her nonetheless, and so, of course, I care for her because she's in my daughter's life. So I gave her a box of condoms yesterday, and she's like, what's this for? And I said, you know, I'd rather you use plan A than have to worry about plan B. And that's the kind of relationship we have. And she says, I don't know that I'm going to need that. And I said, you know what? Better to have it and not need it than to not have it and need it. So here, just take it. So she did. And we went out to dinner and we watched the first half of that amazing final NBA game at the sushi restaurant. Then we came back and her best girlfriend, they've been best friends since kindergarten, so that's going on like 16 years, came and picked her up, and they were going to go out clubbing. So she was like, don't set the alarm before you go to sleep because I don't want to have it beep and wake you up. And, of course, I've got the cat, right? So I leave the house unarmed, which I normally set my alarm at night, and I, for the first time, got to bed at a decent hour. I watched the second half of the game by myself. I watched the ebullient press conferences afterwards, which was really amazing. The athleticism was fabulous, and LeBron played an amazing game, but so did Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. And they were such gracious winners. They were so kind with their statements to and about the San Antonio Spurs. It was really lovely. And all those man hugs, that just makes my heart. I've been an NFL fan since I was like in first grade, and that used to always touch me when the guys would slap each other on the ass. Well, now it's even better because they're giving each other these huge big bear hugs, these huge, huge specimens of mankind, and it's just, I just think, get the biggest kick out of that. So I've had some late nights lately because I actually have somebody in my life, Mr. Wonderful, and he travels 50% of the time. So when he's in town, we try and take advantage of the opportunity to see each other, and that usually involves burning the midnight oil. And I'm up at 5:30 in the morning to prepare for the program. So last night, he's out of town. My daughter's out. I'm home with the cat. It's like 9:45. I decide, you know what? I'm going to read in bed for a bit, and I'm going to go to bed at a decent hour. So I turn off my phone, the ring, and I do just that. And I kind of have the mom ear. One, if you're a parent, you know that one ear is open. I'm just kind of waiting to know when my daughter gets home. And so I doze off and on and off and on. And at one point, I thought I heard her. So I got up, and I'm standing in the house going, Catherine, there's no answer. So I go back to bed. I toss and I turn. I don't want to actually check my phone because I don't want to have to turn on the light, get on my reading glasses, and do that. I just figure that she's going to do the right thing. Get up at 5:30, no daughter. So at that point, I send her a text, and I said, you know, this is not cool. I don't care that you're 21. You're still, it's the only common courtesy that you're going to let me know that you're not going to be home for whatever reason. And if it's about driving under the influence, more power to you, don't. But our second guest today has a solution for us about that, which we're going to talk about, which is you can responsibly imbibe, and then if you feel that you need help, her company is going to be able to help you. So we'll go into that with Brandy at the second part of our program. So I send, I don't know, five texts, and then finally I call her after I get to the studio. It's about 8:15 Pacific this morning. It goes right to voicemail. So now I start texting her girlfriend. I happen to have her phone number, and no response. And then I call her girlfriend, and no answer. So right about, 15 minutes ago, I send a text to the father of my daughter, my ex-husband, and I say, I haven't been able to reach her. I did not sleep most of the night. I'm sick with worry. Would you see what you can find out and send me a text so that I can, you know, stop with this? So right as we're about ready to go live, I get a text on her girlfriend's phone that, yes, they're fine. They had too much to drink. They crashed at somebody's house. They're going back to get the car because they had gotten a ride. She didn't think it was going to be a problem. And I said, you did all the right things except for it. You didn't let me know. So there we go with parenting that never ends. So congratulations to the Miami Heat. I'm actually a LeBron James fan, and I know that those of you who think he bolted from the Cavaliers find him an opportunist and, you know, a gun for hire or whatever. It's really tough to argue with success. Three finals appearances and two back-to-back wins, and receiving the trophy from Bill Russell for the MVP award makes, I think, it all, it makes sense. It works. And finally, an all-female jury is going to be hearing the murder case against the Florida Neighborhood Watch captain George Zimmerman next week, with opening arguments set for Monday. The jury was selected yesterday afternoon. They're saying it is comprised of five white women and one black or Hispanic woman. Under Florida law, six-person juries hear all criminal cases except for capital offenses. And then today, the judge is supposed to make a ruling on the admissibility of technology used to analyze the screams on the 911 call from the night of the shooting. And we will get into more news of the day after we have our conversation with Tupper Hull, again, Vice President of Communications with the Western States Petroleum Association, joining us this morning for another opinion on the matter.
This is Tupper.
Hi, Tupper. Good morning. It's Maria Sanchez. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Maria.
You're welcome. So first, let's go into what is the Western States Petroleum Association. Then we'll go into what is hydraulic fracturing, and then what is your stand on that, specifically for the state of California, and then for the country in general, especially in light of the story that broke today about Wyoming. So we got a lot on
sure.
our plate.
Sure. The Western States Petroleum Association represents the major integrated oil companies in six western states. We also have members like Valero and Tesoro, who are independent refiners, which means they only operate refineries. They don't have crude oil reserves, or they don't produce crude oil. They buy it all on the market. And we also have members like Occidental and Era Energy that simply produce oil. They don't own refineries and market the oil.
And so what is your goal or the mission of the Western States?
Our mission is to be a public policy advocate on behalf of our members. So we operate in California and five other Western states. We engage with state legislatures and regulatory agencies to represent the industry's views when there are regulations or legislation impacting the industry under discussion.
Now, specifically for California, it's my understanding that there were 11 or 12 bills that were proposed that basically were asking for a moratorium on the process.
And they were either asking for a moratorium on the process or imposed constraints on production that we felt were not only unnecessary but really were intended to limit or stop increased energy production in the state. We opposed those bills. And during the debate, I think it became clear among a majority of members of the legislature that the facts and the science didn't support the kind of actions that those bills were proposing, and they died as the legislature confronted one of its regular deadlines for legislation. As a result, we now have in California two bills, AB7 and SB4, which we believe will emerge as comprehensive legislative packages to further regulate hydraulic fracturing. That's the debate we believe California should be having, not a debate over unnecessary moratoriums or other constraints. But there obviously is a desire to look at the technology of hydraulic fracturing and energy production in the state to determine if it's necessary or desirable to have some additional regulations to make sure that the practice is safe. And that's the conversation we're going to be having. We have no doubt, our members certainly have no doubt, that in the very near future there will be more regulation on hydraulic fracturing, and hopefully they'll be sensible and practical regulations, and they're prepared to operate under those regulations.
So are you in agreement with those two bills that you mentioned, the AB7 and the SB4?
Those two bills are works in progress, I should say. In other words, for example, Senator Pavley's bill initially had a moratorium in it and other measures that we did not support. She has indicated publicly that she's removing the moratorium language, and she is prepared to work with the oil industry and other stakeholders, the environmental community, to craft regulations that are sensible and make sense, but that do not unnecessarily constrain energy production. And so we hope that we can ultimately support that bill. We certainly are committed to working with Senator Pavley and the other stakeholders to craft something that will give the public confidence energy production is safe and allow the continued development of our domestic energy resources. This debate is interesting in that we have the opportunity facing us, which nobody would have thought was possible just a few short years ago, of developing domestic energy that will wean us being California, entirely off imported oil. We could be energy independent given the resources we have here in the state. So obviously this is a critically important conversation that's going to be having in the remainder of this legislative session for all of California's consumers, businesses, and the economy in general.
Well, and Senator Pavley has agreed to be a guest on our program. I'm just working with her schedulers to lock that in, so I'll let you know when that conversation happens. And I am also on her advisory panel, which we meet once a quarter, and that meeting is a week from today. So I had unwittingly, I had no idea.
That's great to hear, Maria, because, obviously you are familiar that Senator Pavley is a leader in environmental policy. And oftentimes our industry and Senator Pavley are not in agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that as we go forward, there will be specifics of various proposals that we might not agree on. But we certainly give Senator Pavley credit for having taken the responsible approach to hydraulic fracturing. As you know, and I believe you recently had a guest on that reflects this, there is an enormous amount of misinformation and hyperbole surrounding this issue, not just in California, but nationally. It is hyperbole that's not supported by science or the facts, but it nonetheless, if that's all you heard, you would think this is a terrible technology and a terrible idea to pursue. But we give a lot of credit to Senator Pavley and to other members of the legislature who did look at the facts and said, there are some areas that we want to be cautious about as we use this technology, but there is no evidence to suggest it needs to be banned. There is simply no evidence at all, zero, that hydraulic fracturing, which has been used in California for better than 60 years, has ever adversely impacted the state's environment, water quality, or anything. I know that is surprising if all you've heard are folks from the Center for Biological Diversity or Food and Water Watch talk, but those are the facts.
So if folks don't know what hydraulic fracturing is, would you give them a basic definition of it so that we can put it into context for them? Because I know that it's out there, and I'm not quite sure why it's such a topic of a conversation now, and so much legislation was recently just tried to be pushed through after 60 years. Is it because of the Monterey Shale?
It is largely because of the Monterey Shale. It's probably more the result of energy production that has exploded in parts of the Midwest and East where hydraulic fracturing has been incredibly successful at unlocking natural gas resources that heretofore had not been available. We as a nation face the unpleasant prospect of literally running out of natural gas just about 10 years ago, and we were looking at having to build import facilities to bring in liquefied natural gas from other parts of the world, again, placing our nation's economy and defense at greater risk of being held captive by foreign countries.
Mm-hmm.
That has turned around dramatically, largely because of two technologies, one, hydraulic fracturing, and two, directional drilling that allows very precise placement of drill bores underground. And so, as a result, folks who are not keen on seeing increased fossil fuel development and consumption use ramped up very vigorous campaigns. A gentleman named Josh Fox produced a film called Gasland that was a flamboyantly inaccurate portrayal of the technology, but unfortunately many people learned about the technology only from that film. And so there has been a very vigorous movement created nationally to stop the practice of hydraulic fracturing, and members of legislators around the country have taken that up. But I think as we go forward and more is learned about it, people are realizing that what they've been told is not necessarily true.
And the process itself, what fracking is, how logistically how it works simply.
Hydraulic fracturing is a pretty straightforward and simple operation. It's not terribly exotic, and it is very well understood by the industry. As I said, it's been around for a long time. When you have oil locked into geological formations like shale, you can put a hole into the shale and the oil will not flow into that bore and be accessible to be either brought up to the surface under its own pressure or pumped up with pumps like conventional oil resources are. What they discovered is that if you inject into that shale water at sufficient pressures to crack it, you will create these tiny little fissures in there for, maybe 100 yards from either side of the bore. The fractures are, as I've heard described, approximately the size of a pencil lead. So these are very tiny. They're very limited to the region immediately adjacent to the bore. And, of course, this is occurring at 6,000 to 10,000 feet under the ground. Those fissures, those little cracks, will allow either natural gas or, in California's case, oil, to then begin to flow into that bore and be available to be pumped to the surface. And that's it. One thing that people need to understand or should understand, hydraulic fracturing is considered a well completion technology. It takes place once a well has been drilled, equipment is brought in, tanks and trucks with large pumps on them. The water and sand and a very tiny amount of chemicals mixed with that mixture is injected into the ground and then withdrawn, and the well goes into its production phase. So the entire process takes anywhere from 3 to 5 days and then is done. It is not a process like that takes place over a long period of time or it continues during a well's production phase.
So in other words, once you set it up and the system is in place, there's no more fracturing going on. There's just pumping.
No.
You're availing yourself of the resource.
Correct. One-time operation to open up the fissures to allow the resource to flow into the well bore, and then you're done.
Okay. So now a couple of things that were mentioned earlier this week was pollution, because what's coming out with the oil could affect the environment. Two was the water tables and the aquifers being threatened. And then three, it was that the water that's used for the process itself is inordinate and exorbitant and draining resources from agriculture.
Well, let me give you some facts on that. First of all, we produce about 10 to 15 barrels of water for every barrel of oil. This is not with hydraulic fracturing. Oil companies in California are water management company. They pump up a lot of water, they remove the oil, they replace the water from the zone. This is water that's been commingled with petroleum products underground, deep underground, for millions of years. It has contaminants in it. It is not clean water. It goes back into the zone in which it came. Hydraulic fracturing doesn't adversely impact that water. It's already contaminated. It's already water you do not want involved in your drinking water supplies. Companies have been handling that. A very large amount of regulation in California addresses how that water has to be handled. And all of that has been in place for a very long time. There is also this myth, and I heard it expressed by your guest earlier, that a hydraulic fracturing operation uses millions of gallons of water. The facts are, we did a survey of hydraulic fracturing reports that are submitted and made public on the Frac Focus website. It's www.fracfocus.org. All of our companies who produce 80% of the oil in California are voluntarily reporting their hydraulic fracturing on Frac Focus. You can go on there and look at exactly how much water was used, where wells were fractured, what the chemicals used in those fracturing operations are. The average water use per hydraulic fracturing in California, there were 568 wells fractured in California during 2012. The average amount of water was 116,000 gallons. Now, that seems like a lot of water. The average golf course requires 316,000 gallons a day to keep green. So we are not talking about inordinate amounts of water. Just to put it in one additional perspective, the total amount of water used in hydraulic fracturing in California in 2012 was a little over 200 acre feet. An acre foot is about 325,000 gallons of water. So 200 acre feet of water were used. Again, seems like a lot of water. Farming operations in California in 2012 used 34 million acre feet. So there is not a conflict in California between water use for energy production and farming.
Now, what about the pollution aspects that were raised?
Well, as I've said, we have, because of the regulations that have existed for a long time in California, we have never had an incident. No one, not even the Center for Biological Diversity, has ever claimed that hydraulic fracturing has contaminated groundwater in California. There are cases around the country where claims have been made, but I will tell you that the U.S. EPA has twice testified before Congress that they have no documentation of hydraulic fracturing ever contaminating groundwater.
And that brings
us.
This
is shocking to people who have heard some of the claims being made by organizations opposed to this. But these are the facts, and this is the science that exists around this very safe technology.
And yesterday, as we spoke earlier, the U.S. EPA is dropping its plan to have the reviews of its finding about hydraulic fracturing linked to groundwater pollution in Wyoming.
Correct. So I saw that article as well.
So that report came out in late 2011, and they say they're just going to refer back to the state officials to let them go on. I understand the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has provided a $1.5 million grant to help that in terms of that study. So that's and they're going to study water quality and palatability concerns.
A couple of things that are important to bear in mind, and all of what you said is true as I understand it. The environmental community will point to one or two studies or cases where they feel there have been impacts on groundwater. Hydraulic fracturing has been used millions of times in the United States, and it, as I mentioned, has dramatically altered this country's energy future for the better. So they are focusing on a very small number of cases. Those cases become very technical and complicated. And as you said, the U.S. EPA initially had some findings in Pavilion, Wyoming that suggested there may have been some contamination. What we're talking about in these instances are natural gas wells. And oftentimes, if anyone saw, for example, the movie Gasland, there's this famous scene that keeps getting repeated over and over again where a gentleman holds a match up to his faucet, and the faucet ignites because there's methane present. Now, subsequent analysis have proved absolutely that incident didn't have anything to do with hydraulic fracturing. There are many places in the United States where water wells have been drilled into formations that are rich in methane gas, and that gas makes its way into the water wells and can be ignited. It is completely unrelated, and as was that instance, to hydraulic fracturing. But there are instances where there is methane and other chemicals that will show up into somebody's drinking water well, and then there's investigations that take place as to where it came from. As I mentioned, all I can tell you is what the U.S. EPA says. No documentation that hydraulic fracturing has ever contaminated groundwater in the United States.
And let's speak briefly about the scope of the Monterey Shale and what that could mean potentially to the state in terms of the revenue and the employment and the production.
Hundreds of thousands of jobs, billions of dollars in new tax revenue for the state of California, and a huge boost to the economy of the San Joaquin Valley that certainly could use a little economic assistance. This is a part of the state, if you visited it, that is substantially behind the riches and the economic prosperity that characterizes California. The Monterey Shale is a very large formation of shale. It is, according to the U.S. Geological Survey, two-thirds of the nation's entire shale oil resource resides within the Monterey and California San Joaquin Valley. If this resource can be developed, and that is still an open question, I want to emphasize, but if it can be developed, it has the potential to do enormous amount of good for the state of California, get us out of our chronic budget problems, put enormous amounts of people to work, revitalize the infrastructure of the state of California. I mean, this is an opportunity that does not come along often in the life cycle of a state. And if people doubt it's real, all they need to do is look at North Dakota, which is experiencing an economic renaissance. They have the highest growth rate in their economy. They have the lowest unemployment rate in the United States. And they have more money in their state coffers than they know what to do with.
And
of that is the result of hydraulic fracturing, directional drilling, and energy production in a shale oil resource there.
And it's got a trickle effect, too, because I was in Sturgis, South Dakota last year for the motorcycle rally, and they were talking about how the boom in North Dakota was affecting South Dakota and the neighboring states just in terms of bringing people in, and they were commuting to North Dakota or they were, you know, that sort of thing. So they were abuzz with that last August when I was there. I was like, wow.
Absolutely. It is incredible what's taking place.
Now,
McDonald's is offering signing bonuses for people to go to work in their hamburger.
And I heard housing is you know, very limited, and they're paying $2,000
for one bedroom. It's true, and I think it would be a mistake to ignore. It has put some pressure on the state's infrastructure for housing and the roadways. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much economic activity going on that it is creating some problems. And so I think, and we certainly, our members understand that we need to manage any increase in energy production responsibly and intelligently. I think what is different in California is oil has been produced, a lot of oil has been produced in parts of the San Joaquin Valley for over 100 years. So there already is not just experience and familiarity, but an infrastructure, a pipeline and processing plant infrastructure down in that part of the state that can be utilized if and when the Monterey Shale development really takes off. So it is not as if we are going to be introducing a new industrial sector, industrial activity into a part of the state where that activity hasn't been occurring for a very long time.
And then finally, I want to say, Tupper, because I know you have your agenda, which I don't mean that pejoratively. It's just that you obviously have an existence for a reason. But there was a recent study by USC that also is doubling back on what you just said. They projected hundreds of thousands of jobs, billions in economic growth, and new tax revenue from the Monterey Shale. So it's in accordance with what you've just been sharing with us. And I don't know, did you have anything to do with funding that study? Or?
Oh, yes. Yes, we did. Okay. And then we made no secret about it. We contributed to that, as did other participants. The school of USC also contributed to it. But, yes, I mean, we were aware of the potential, and we wanted to document it and let people know what this could possibly mean for the state. And so we did participate in funding that study.
Okay. Well, Tupper, is there anything else you'd like to add to the conversation? Because you've done a great job.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, we're certainly looking forward to now having this responsible and constructive conversation about additional regulations. As you may be aware, the state of California, through the Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources, also is about to unveil a new regulatory package. Excuse me. So we're going to be continuing to produce and develop our domestic energy resources under the watchful eye of the state of California as we go forward.
Perfect. Thank you for your time, Tupper. I really do appreciate it. I know you're busy.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you.
Of course. And that is Tupper Hull. He is the Vice President of Communications for the Western States Petroleum Association, and a perfect example of what the Maria Sanchez Show endeavors to do. Get all the facts, and sometimes there are two or three or four sides to the story. One thing we'll never do is have two guests on at the same time who have opposing views. Why? Because I believe that then it escalates. People start disrespecting one another. They start talking over one another. It muddies the messaging, and I would rather have somebody on for their, you know, whatever amount of time they've got in to speak to the cause or whatever it is that's in the news, and then let the other person's side have their say, and then you, the listener, can make your own decision. And that's why I say knowledge is power, because the more we know, the more that we can make better informed decisions. So now we're going to shift gears. It's Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. It's the first day of summer, and you might have plans to go out, and you might want to party or whatever. So we've got a guest on who actually approached us to talk about what they do to help people drink and perform responsibly. So we are having Brandy Moses join us.
Hello.
Hi, Brandy. Good morning. You're live on the Maria Sanchez Show, General Manager of My Driver. Welcome to the program. Good morning to you.
Thank you. Good morning to you also.
Thank you. So let's talk about My Driver and how it works so people can avail themselves of your service or one like yours. And thank you for sharing your information with us.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me on air. My Driver, we're a new local company here in Ventura County, and we've just made it our mission to keep our roads safer, and we've been doing that by providing designated drivers and personal chauffeurs to people.
Now, you cover Santa Barbara, Ventura, and Los Angeles counties, however.
Yes, we do. We cover all three counties. Our offices are located in Simi Valley, but we have drivers located all throughout Ventura County in all the different cities. That way we're on call 24/7, we're always available. That way no one ever has an excuse to get behind the wheel and operate under the influence.
So how does that work, Brandy, especially if you don't make plans in advance? Let's say that you go out and you've had one too many and you don't want to drive home.
Absolutely, and that happens so often. And how that works, you call into our number. We, like I said, we have drivers on call 24/7, and we will send a team of two drivers to pick you up to your location, and the drivers arrive. One driver will get out and drive you and your car back home, while the other driver follows behind. So that way, you don't have to worry about leaving your car unattended in a parking lot overnight, and then you have to hassle with getting up and getting it the next day. So it's pretty much a win-win situation. You don't have the drunk drivers on the road, and they're still able to get their car home safely with them.
And what's the delay in terms of when you call and when you arrive?
We have drivers 24/7 on call. So, and like I said, we do have drivers in all the different cities. So we can dispatch and get someone out to you very quickly. I mean, it may take 30 minutes just depending on where the location is, mm-hmm. but we can get drivers to you around 30 to 45 minutes.
And what are the fees associated?
The fees with the designated driver service is a $38 flat fee, and then there's mileage. And we also offer the personal chauffeurs. So that's going to be if you have planned a night out and you want to hire a chauffeur to drive you in your own car, and that is $38 per hour.
So they come to your home, they get in your car, and they take you to where you're going, and you pay them $38 an hour while they're doing that?
Yes. Yes, that's if you want to do the personal chauffeur service. And, I mean, it's great. It's great for nights out when you know you're going to be out having some drinks. You have the chauffeur. They're standing by. So if you want to hop in the car and go to a different location, that's also good for executives that are busy traveling, because that way they can turn their car basically into a mobile office and get more done on the road. It's wonderful for medical appointments when you know you're going to be unable to drive after the medical appointment. And you don't have to hassle with the parking, directions, traffic, anything like that. And the personal chauffeurs, the great thing about that is if what we've experienced is a lot of, you know, executives are hiring the personal chauffeurs, but our chauffeurs also double as a personal assistant. So during the day, for busy executives, if they have a business meeting, the chauffeur can pick them off at the business meeting, and then the chauffeur can then go run and pick up their dry cleaning or have their car serviced or, you know, any other errands that they're looking to get done. So it kind of kills two birds with one stone.
And I saw on your website one of the suggestions you made, too, is like if your car needs to go in for servicing, which that's hassles. So I've lived by myself. And so to get it in and then to get a ride back and then to get back to get the car, it's a bummer. So if they got dropped off wherever they needed to be and then were picked up when it was done, then that's one less thing you have
exactly.
to worry about logistically.
And you know, a lot of people who are stuck in the office all day, they don't have time to go out and get their oil changed. So for people like that, I mean, this is a great service because our chauffeurs can actually come straight to your office. You can just hand them the keys, tell them where to go. They can go get the car serviced for you, bring it back to your office. You never have to leave. You never have to do a thing, and it's all taken care of for you.
So, Brandy, we are so cool about inspiring folks, like you, from idea to execution, that in because everybody's got an idea or everybody's got a book in them, but not all of us do that. How did this come about, my driver? What's the backstory?
It came about, you know, we all live local. There's two other owners, and we live locally here in this area. And me personally, I love to go out to dinner, have a glass of wine with dinner. But the problem is, you know, one glass of wine, because I'm fairly petite, so it's going to put me over the legal limit. And it's just, and not only, you know, for personal reasons, you know, I mean, a DUI, it's costing, you know, up to $15,000 in fines, you lose your license. And the statistics show that back in 2010, there were 1.41 million drivers arrested for driving under the influence. So, and like I said, for me personally, one drink is going to put me over the limit. So, you know, it was one of those things here in where we live. If you live in a larger city like Los Angeles, I mean, you obviously have a lot of options. There's taxi cabs on every street corner, but out here, there's a limited availability of the taxis. So, and I've personally had to wait 30, 45 minutes for a taxi to come, and then you get home, and then you have to worry with the stress of getting a taxi to take you back to your car the next day. So, I mean, just the whole idea of that is basically what inspired us, and, you know, the statistics, the DUI statistics here in California have just been steadily increasing over the last 5 years. So, you know, we've just made it our mission to keep our roads safer. So it's definitely a driving service. It keeps people off the roads. You're still able to get your car home. The personal chauffeur service is great because it helps minimize the amount of distracted drivers out there. You know, like I said, the busy executives trying to talk on the phone, texting, things like that, it'll keep them where they can just basically utilize their time in their car in a way that, you know, it helps them get their work done while maintaining safety on the road.
And there was a study out in the last month that said, I think it was 40% of designated drivers end up imbibing, so that they aren't alcohol free as they set out to be. So that would also counteract that. I mean, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Now you have employment. You know,
when you're going out with your friends, it's who wants to flip the coin and see who's going to be the designated driver for the night. You know what I mean? So our service really helps out with that because you don't have to worry about it. And when you factor in the cost of DUIs and things like that, this is much, it's cheaper and safer. And, you know, our service is a lot cheaper than a limo, and a lot of times it's less expensive than a taxi cab.
And then you have employment opportunities for drivers?
Absolutely. We absolutely do have employment opportunities, and people can visit our website. It's sendmydriver.com, and there's information on there about how to apply to be a driver.
And anything else, Brandy?
I think that's about it. I think we covered it.
Good. Thank you so much, and good luck, and congratulations.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And, you know, if any of your listeners call in and need to hire a driver, if they just mention your show, we'll give them 20% off.
Oh, that's nice. I'll post that, too. Thank you, Brandy. That's very
Perfect.
Kind of you. Appreciate it. And good luck with everything. Appreciate your time. Brandy Moses is one of the co-owners of sendmydriver.com and My Driver, and she contacted me, and that I'm totally open to all kinds of programming. So please log on to mariasanchezshow.com, and you can get my email. Even my phone number is on there, and away we go. We have next week some compelling guests. One of them on Monday is about how not to fight with your family. A doctor is going to be visiting with us. There was a study out that came out yesterday that is, where is it? Oh, here. It's in Current Biology, and the lead researcher is going to be joining us. She has found evidence that vegetables and fruits don't die the moment they are harvested. They respond to their environment for days, and we can use light to get them to make more cancer-fighting antioxidants at certain times of the day. So she's going to be visiting with us next week also. So we've got a full week packed as in general, and this falls under the TMI category. Poor James Gandolfini, who passed away, the autopsy revealed today that he died of a heart attack, natural causes of a heart attack. That seems like fast. It seems forever before we get autopsy results here. So apparently they're saying that his 13-year-old son, Michael, found him collapsed in the bathroom of his Rome hotel room, and the emergency room chief who tried to resuscitate him, they said they spent 40 minutes when he arrived before declaring him dead. But the TMI, too much information part, falls under what he had for dinner that night. So they're saying that he had struggled with an addiction to alcohol in his final weeks, and this article, these are the words they used to describe it, scarfed down a decadent final meal that included at least eight alcoholic drinks. He guzzled. That's how there's, so I'm not going to go into that, but what he did is he had a pina colada with two additional shots of rum on the side. He followed that up with the exact same thing, pina colada, two shots. Then he downed two beers. He also had back-to-back orders of fried prawns slathered with mayonnaise chili sauce, as well as a heaping portion of foie gras. He ate the entire meal himself. His son was with him at dinner. He had his own meal. And I guess the mother of the son is his first wife. She flew to Italy to be with their son. I can only imagine how dramatic that was. So sales of Soprano episodes and boxed sets shot up yesterday on Amazon and iTunes, and fans crowded the HBO store in Midtown to collect Sopranos memorabilia. So may James Gandolfini rest in peace. Thank you so much for a fabulous week. Thank you so much for listening, for downloading, for listening on demand, for telling your friends. We appreciate it. Have a fabulous day, a wonderful weekend, and look forward to visiting with you on Monday.
listener.